You hear the music. Hello, everybody. I'm Ed Robinson, and welcome to another exciting edition of At the Rim. This is the program that gets you caught up on anything and everything happening around the association. That's right, the NBA. Coming up on this edition of the program, we have an interview with Lauren Gunn, co-host of the Objective Basketball and the Gunshot Podcast. The Objective Podcast highlights the latest information in the NBA. And with the Gunshot Podcast, Lauren, along with her brother Grant, give you the latest Dallas Mavericks content as well as information regarding the NBA small market teams. On the, in the interview, Lauren and I discussed Kyrie Irving, also Luka Doncic, and so much more. So Lauren's coming up on this edition of the program, so it's going to be exciting, no doubt. All right, let's start with my top three storylines. I want to start off with the Minnesota Timberwolves. First of all, Minnesota, wow, you talking about a fall from grace, and you talking about putting a foot in the rabbit hole, going really deep in the rabbit hole. Well, this past Sunday, in the game against the New Orleans Pelicans in the final day of the regular season, during a timeout, teammates Rudy Gobert and Kyle Anderson had an exchange, a verbal exchange, as it started off at first. Tempers flared, it got hot, it got heavy, and then Kyle said something to Rudy, and then minutes later, Rudy swung at Kyle, and then there was a skirmish that happened on the bench. So immediately after several minutes of that back and forth exchange verbally from the game, and then we now know that Rudy will not be playing in the play-in tournament game in Los Angeles against the Lakers. We'll get into the play-in and the playoffs with spots and all of that stuff in just a minute. But to make, we go from really worse to even more worse. So you have Gobert and Anderson have the exchange on the bench during the timeout, teammates having to restrain both Kyle and Rudy. Then on top of that, you have Jaden McDaniels that's going to be out for the remainder of the season for punching a wall and wind up fracturing his hand out of frustration. Now, wow, I don't know what to make of this. I know one thing is for sure, not just in sports, but anything in life, any problems that you have in handling different situations, are tempers going to flare? Absolutely. Will people get mad at each other? Absolutely. That's a part of life. It's one thing when you're having a disagreement with somebody and tempers are going to flare, but it's another thing when you swing at somebody and it just goes from bad to worse in front of a national, well, not a national television audience, but it was in front of a television audience that unfortunately, of course, with social media, the internet became worldwide. Now, it was reported and it was caught on camera that Kyle Anderson said a very bad word to Rudy Gobert. Now, again, as I stated before, I understand that you have emotions, you have frustrations, those things are going to happen. However, you don't call someone a bad word, a disrespect them or anything like that, even in the heat of the battle, even in the heat of the moment. Yeah, we get caught up in our moments. We get caught up where we lose control. We don't know, but man, this looks so bad for the Minnesota Timberwolves because now they have the distraction, Gobert and Anderson situation. Rudy's not going to be playing in the play-in game against the Lakers. And then on top of that, you have Jaden McDaniels, who's going to be out for the remainder of the year after punching a wall. And on top of that, he wound up hurting himself really bad as a result of this. And it's just too much going on in Minnesota right now. And it could have not happened at a worse time. And then you got to go to L.A. against a Lakers team that's hot right now. AD's playing well. We're seeing the emergence of Austin Reeves. And, of course, LeBron being LeBron, getting in the playoff mode, LeBron. They don't need this right now. And you need a guy like a Rudy Gobert to defend Anthony Davis. You need a Rudy Gobert to cause matchup problems against LeBron James. And now with Gobert being suspended for this game, it hurts Minnesota so bad. And I don't know what's going to happen from this. I mean, they're going to need a miracle going out to L.A. to go up against the Lakers. But again, the latest with the Timberwolves, Kyle Anderson and Rudy Gobert got into a verbal altercation. They got a little physical. They have the regular season in the game against the New Orleans Pelicans. Both there were teammates on their bench. They had to restrain both of them. Rudy was ejected from the game. The NBA suspends Rudy for one game, which is the playoff play-in game against the Lakers. And then Jaden McDaniels is out for the season after an act of frustration, punches a wall, and he winds up fracturing his hand so bad that he's out for the season. So tough times in Minnesota. Not a great time to lose players, whether due to injury or suspension. And it's going to be tough. They're going out to L.A. Again, as I stated before, the Lakers are just red hot, and they're getting hot at the right time. AD, LeBron going in the playoff mode is going to be sick, and not a good time right now for the Minnesota Timberwolves. All right, my next storyline is going to be the NBA playoffs. So we're set, but we're not set just yet. Of course, we're still waiting on the 7th and 8th seeds for both the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference, but here are the current seedings in the Eastern Conference through 6. Let's start off with the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, the Milwaukee Bucks. The number two seed belongs to the Boston Celtics. We do have two matchups that are already set in the East. We have the 4th seed Cleveland Cavaliers going up against the 5th seed New York Knicks. That should be an exciting one. I think that one's going to steal the show in the first round. And then we have the 3rd seed Philadelphia 76ers going up against the 6th seed Brooklyn Nets. Let's move over now to the Western Conference. We have the number one seed Denver Nuggets, and we have the number two seed Memphis Grizzlies. Okay, we know that it's always a dogfight in the Wild Wild West. So now these two matchups have already been set up in the first round. We have the 4th seed Phoenix Suns going up against the 5th seed Los Angeles Clippers. You talk about star power in this series. We've got Chris Paul, we've got Kevin Durant, we've got Devin Booker, we've also got Kawhi Leonard in this thing. We also got Russell Westbrook in this thing as well. PG-13, we'll see how the status goes. We may see him maybe in game 2 or game 3 of the series, but regardless, it's star power in this series. Anybody can win this one. And then we have the Sacramento Kings, the 3rd seed, going up against the 6th seed defending champion Golden State Warriors. You talk about in-state rivalry. You talk about Central California versus Northern California, the Bay Area, to be exact. Listen, we know Golden State's pedigree. They're the defending champions, right? We know about Steph Curry. We know about Klay Thompson, the Splash Brothers. We also know about Draymond Green. We know about Jordan Poole. We know about the return of Andrew Wiggins. But we also know about the resurgence of the Sacramento Kings, De'Aaron Fox, Domantas Sabonis, Malik Monk, Keegan Murray. I mean, Sacramento's been the feel-good story this year. I'm so happy that Sacramento is back in the limelight. It's been a long time coming, but it's great to see Sacramento doing their thing. And kudos to Mike Brown on a great first season with the Sacramento Kings. So again, the matchups that we have set already in the Eastern Conference in the first round are the Cleveland Cavaliers and the New York Knicks, the 76ers going up against the Brooklyn Nets. And then the two matchups that we have set in the Western Conference are the Phoenix Suns and the Los Angeles Clippers. And we have the Sacramento Kings going up against the Golden State Warriors. So now that leads to my last storyline, the play-in tournament. So that sets the stage for our play-in tournament. And I mentioned one of the games earlier. We have first the two Western Conference games. First, we have the Los Angeles Lakers going up against the Minnesota Timberwolves. Not a great time for Minnesota to lose players going up against a L.A. team that's hot right now. You know the squad for L.A., Anthony Davis, LeBron James, Austin Reeves, who's emerging. You've got D'Angelo Russell, who's been playing well as of late, coming back from an injury. Dennis Schroeder is in the mix as well. Not a great time for Minnesota right now. And then you've got an interesting matchup as the New Orleans Pelicans will go up against the Oklahoma City Thunder. The crowd's going to be rocking down in the Crescent City in New Orleans again. No Zion. I don't think it's going to be a problem because you've got Brandon Ingram. You've got CJ Monk. You've got Jonas Valanciunas, who's a big man that's capable of getting points on the board. And, of course, you've got a savvy defender with Herb Jones. Jose Alvarado may be back for this game against Oklahoma City. But kudos to Oklahoma City, a young nucleus with a bright future. Of course, with SGA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and company, Josh Giddey has played well. Jalen Williams is going to be up in the forefront for the Rookie of the Year campaign this year. So Lakers in Minnesota, could be a decent game. But New Orleans and Oklahoma City is going to be the show stealer in this play-in tournament. Let's move over to the Eastern Conference now. We've got the Miami Heat going up against the Atlanta Hawks. Miami played in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. Jimmy Butler, a.k.a. Jimmy Buckets. You know his pedigree. Jimmy Butler, one of the toughest guys in the NBA. You know, a never-say-die attitude, a no-quit attitude. You've also got Tyler Hero. You've got also Bam Adebayo up in the run for the Defensive Player of the Year Award. Eric Spoelstra, again, doing another great job with the Miami Heat. And then you've got the Atlanta Hawks. Trae Young, what can you say about Ice Trae, right? Just lighting up the threes. You've also got John Collins in the mix. You've got DeJounte Murray. Atlanta, again, a team with a young nucleus. They're still trying to find themselves. And then you have the other Eastern Conference play-in tournament where you've got the Toronto Raptors going up against the Chicago Bulls. First for Chicago, DeMar DeRozan. You know, DeMar is going to be looking forward to this. This is going to be an emotional game for him. Heading back to the team and the city where he began his professional career at, that's going to be an emotional moment in Toronto. And then, of course, not just with DeMar, but you got Nikola Vucevic, Zach LaVine. So the Bulls, they've got a lot to play for as well. And how about the Toronto Raptors? You know, Fred VanVleet, still consistent, still one of the best shooters in the league. You got Spicy P, Pascal Siakam, and then OG Anunoby. You know, Toronto, again, it's hard to believe it's only was several years ago that they won the NBA championship with Kawhi Leonard when he had the one season with Toronto. But the Raptors still relevant, not just in the NBA, but relevant in the Eastern Conference. So that's where we stand in the playoffs and currently in the play-in tournament. Play-in tournament's been a lot of fun since they introduced it in the bubble year of 2020. I have to admit, I wasn't a fan of the play-in tournament in the beginning, but it's slowly growing on me a little bit. So this should be a lot of fun. Like I said before, we're in one of the best times in sports right now, and certainly the NBA is going to get hot and heavy around this time. All right, when we come back from the break, I'll have the final league leaders and standings during the 2022-2023 NBA regular season. Stay tuned. I'm Ed Robinson, and you're listening to At the Rim.
Get on top of it before they do. Every 24 minutes, tipped furniture or a falling TV sends an injured child to the emergency room. Preventing tip-over incidents is easy, inexpensive, and only takes 5 minutes. Learn how to secure your furniture and TVs to protect children at anchorit.gov.
Everybody, welcome back to the program. Now it's time for the final look at the league leaders in standings during the 2022-2023 NBA regular season. Let's start off with the final league leaders. Let's start off with points per game. Joel Embiid led the NBA during the regular season at points per game. He averaged 33 points per game. So Joel will win the NBA scoring title. Coming in at number two, Luka Doncic from the Dallas Mavericks. At number three, Damian Lillard from the Portland Trailblazers. At number four, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander from the Oklahoma City Thunder. And at number five, Giannis Antetokounmpo from the Milwaukee Bucks. Next category is rebounds per game. At number one, Domantas Sabonis from the Sacramento Kings. is averaging 12 rebounds per game. And number two, actually, we have a tie for second place. Nikola Jokic from the Denver Nuggets and Giannis Antetokounmpo from the Milwaukee Bucks. At number four, Rudy Gobert from the Minnesota Timberwolves. And at number five, Clint Capella from the Atlanta Hawks. Next category is assists per game. At number one, James Harden from the Philadelphia 76ers. He averaged nearly 11 assists per game. At number two, Trae Young from the Atlanta Hawks. At number three, Nikola Jokic from the Denver Nuggets. At number four, Chris Paul from the Phoenix Suns. And at number five, Ja Morant from the Memphis Grizzlies. Next category is steals per game. At number one, OG Anunoby from the Toronto Raptors. Two, Jimmy Butler from the Miami Heat. At number three, Fred VanVleet from the Toronto Raptors. At number four, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander from the Oklahoma City Thunder. And at number five, De'Anthony Melton from the Philadelphia 76ers. Next category is blocks per game. At number one, Jaren Jackson Jr. from the Memphis Grizzlies. At number two, Nick Claxton from the Brooklyn Nets. At number three, Brook Lopez from the Milwaukee Bucks. At number four, Walker Kessler from the Utah Jazz. And at number five, Miles Turner from the Indiana Pacers. Next category is field goal percentage. At number one, Nick Claxton from the Brooklyn Nets. He shot 70% from the field during the regular season. At number two, we have Mason Plumlee from the Los Angeles Clippers. At number three, Rudy Gobert from the Minnesota Timberwolves. And at number four, Clint Capella from the Atlanta Hawks. And at number five, Jared Allen from the Cleveland Cavaliers. Next category that we have is three-point field goals made. Coming in at number one, Thompson from the Golden State Warriors. At number two, Buddy Hield from the Indiana Pacers. At number three, Steph Curry, one of the Splash Brothers, representing the Golden State Warriors. At number four, Donovan Mitchell from the Cleveland Cavaliers. And at number five, Damian Lillard from the Portland Trail Blazers. Next category is three-point percentage. Coming in at number one, Luke Kennard from the Memphis Grizzlies. He shot 49% from three-point range. At number two, Al Horford from the Boston Celtics. And at number three, Damian Lee from the Phoenix Suns. At number four, Malcolm Brogdon from the Boston Celtics. And at number five, Tyrese Maxey from the Philadelphia 76ers. Next category, free throw percentage. Coming in at number one, we have Tyler Hero from the Miami Heat. He shot 93% from the free throw line during the regular season. At number two, Kevin Durant from the Phoenix Suns. Coming in at number three, one half of the Splash Brothers, Steph Curry from the Golden State Warriors. At number four, Damian Lillard, a.k.a. Dame Dalla, representing the Portland Trail Blazers. And at number five, SGA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander from the Oklahoma City Thunder. And the final category that we have is minutes played. Coming in at number one, representing the Toronto Raptors, Spicy P, Pascal Siakam. He averaged 37 minutes per game. Coming in at number two, Kyrie Irving from the Dallas Mavericks. At number three, Jason Tatum from the Boston Celtics. At number four, from the Philadelphia 76ers, James Harden. And coming in at number five, representing the Toronto Raptors, Fred VanVleet. And that takes care of your final look at the regular season league leaders during the 2022-2023 NBA season. All right, so as I mentioned earlier before, so the regular season is officially over with, and now we have some playoff spots that are wrapped up. But not just yet, though, because we still have the play-in tournament to take care of things. A lot of tournaments said they're jockeying for position to get those 7th and 8th seeds. So certainly going to be a dogfight. It's going to be hot. It's going to be heavy. It's going to be certainly a situation, as we've seen before, since the play-in tournament's been introduced specifically during the bubble year. One thing's for sure. Again, like I said before, I had my reservations about the play-in tournament at first, but it's slowly growing on me. Again, I'm old school where I believe you have that 82-game regular season to earn seeds 1 through 8. But, you know, the NBA trying to increase the ratings, trying to make things happen, and, you know, that's, I guess they say, that's the way the cookie crumbles. So, again, here are the final standings in the Eastern Conference. So the Milwaukee Bucks are the number one seed. followed by the Boston Celtics. They're number two. The Philadelphia 76ers are number three. The Cleveland Cavaliers are the fourth seed. The New York Knicks are the fifth seed, and the Brooklyn Nets are the sixth seed. So Milwaukee, Boston, Philadelphia, Cleveland, New York, and Brooklyn all automatically punch their ticket into the playoffs. So now you have the seventh seed belongs to Atlanta. The eighth seed belongs to, the seventh seed belongs to Miami. I stand corrected. The seventh seed belongs to Miami. The eighth seed belongs to Atlanta. The ninth seed belongs to the Toronto Raptors. And the tenth seed belongs to the Chicago Bulls. So Miami, Atlanta, Toronto, and Chicago are all participating in the play-in tournament. So again, Milwaukee, Boston, Philadelphia, Cleveland, New York, and Brooklyn are all in the playoffs, while Miami, Atlanta, Toronto, and Chicago are all in the play-in tournament. Meanwhile, the rest of the teams in the East, Indiana, Washington, Orlando, Charlotte, and Detroit are all eliminated from playoff contention. Let's move over now to the Western Conference. So you got the Denver Nuggets that are the number one seed, followed by the Memphis Grizzlies are at number two. The Sacramento Kings come in at number three. You have the Phoenix Suns at number four. The Los Angeles Clippers are currently the fifth seed at number five. And the Golden State Warriors, the defending champions, come in at the sixth seed. So you got Denver, Memphis, Sacramento, Phoenix, LA Clippers, and Golden State are all automatically in the playoffs. Now let's continue with the rest of the West. So you've got the LA Lakers are the seventh seed. You've got Minnesota coming in at number eight. New Orleans is at number nine. And then you've got Oklahoma City at number 10. So LA Lakers, Minnesota, New Orleans, and Oklahoma City all are in the play-in tournament. And as for the rest of the West, Dallas, Utah, Portland, Houston, and San Antonio are all eliminated from playoff contention. So again, in the West, Denver, Memphis, Sacramento, Phoenix, LA Clippers, and Golden State playoffs, while LA Lakers, Minnesota, New Orleans, and Oklahoma City are all in the play-in tournament. So again, it's going to get hot, it's going to get heavy, it's going to get ferocious. This is where the level of play gets ramped up. So it's an exciting time in sports right now, and the NBA is going to get red hot slowly but surely. All right, when we come back from the break, I have an interview with Lauren Gunn. She is the co-host of the Objective Basketball and the Gunshot Podcast. The Objective Basketball Podcast highlights the latest information in the NBA. And with the Gunshot Podcast, Lauren, along with her brother Grant, give you the latest Dallas Mavericks content as well as information regarding the NBA small market teams. In the interview, we discuss her thoughts on Kyrie Irving as well as Luka Doncic. We also discuss Jason Kidd, Mark Cuban, the outlook going forward for Dallas next season, and so much more. Lauren is coming up after the break. I'm Ed Robinson, and you're listening to At the Rim.
Get on top of it before they do. Every 24 minutes, tipped furniture or a falling TV sends an injured child to the emergency room. Preventing tip-over incidents is easy, inexpensive, and only takes 5 minutes. Learn how to secure your furniture and TVs to protect children at anchorit.gov.
Here's Lawson. He'll fire to tie the game. No. Neal Akina tried to save it. White to tie it. No. And the Bulls will go home.
win! We'll win! John Holmes saved the Chicago! Beat, beat! What an exciting game! Hey, listen, on the real, exciting game.
Sure, exciting game.
These kids, hey, they could have folded. They could have folded. The biggest lead, Dallas had a 15-point lead. The Bulls could have folded. The guys could have rolled over. They did. Great effort by these young kids, man. What a fun game to call tonight.
The Dallas Mavericks officially eliminated from play-in contention.
The Dallas Mavericks are an absolute mess. Let's say what it is, and I feel very bad saying that because I love me some Mark Cuban, and I respect the hell out of Nico Harrison, who I've known for years. It's an absolute mess.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the report. I don't know who. Somebody said that I was going to request a trade. It was funny, you know, because I didn't know that was true. I didn't say it. I know. I don't know. Sources say it. Yeah, I mean, that's normal.
Right.
I mean, some things got to change, you know, for sure. I mean, last year when we went to Western Conference Finals, we were having fun. You know, the camera, I always talk about the chemistry we had. It was great. But some things got to change for sure. We'll see about it. I don't want to talk to the media about it.
Wow. Welcome back to the program, everybody. That audio is courtesy of NBC Sports Chicago, also ESPN, the Walt Disney Company, the NBA, the National Basketball Association, and the Dallas Mavericks. Wow, the Dallas Mavericks had a chance to qualify for the play-in tournament. It did not happen. And there was a headline back in the day from the show Dallas, who shot JR? Well, here's another question. What happened in Big D? Kyrie, Luka, Mark Cuban? So many questions. We're hoping to get some answers to some of these burning questions as we want to welcome her back to the program. She is the co-host of the Objective Basketball Podcast and also co-host of the Gunshot Podcast. Again, doing great work covering the NBA and, of course, covering her beloved Dallas Mavericks. Ladies and gentlemen, Lauren Gunn. Hey, Lauren, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Ed, thank you so much for having me back. It's good to be chatting. Unfortunate circumstances for Dallas basketball fans, but thank you so much for having me back.
You're welcome, and thank you so much once again for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the program. So I mentioned the headline earlier, Lauren, who shot JR? Well, I want to come up with another headline. What the heck happened in the Big D? There's so much to get to, so let's jump right to it. Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving were the biggest fishes that were caught out of the pond in the trade deadline this year. We've seen what Kevin Durant has done in such a short amount of time with Phoenix. The Suns are in the playoffs. Kyrie Irving, say what you want about him, very unique, but hey, he's box office talent, and he goes to the Dallas Mavericks. What were your thoughts when you found out that the Mavericks had acquired Kyrie at the trade deadline?
Yeah, well, you know, when it happened, I was a little surprised that they actually were the ones that were able to get that deal done with Kyrie, especially with there being, at that time, at least more than one suitors. There were a lot of connections with the Lakers of if they were going to be able to pull that off, what they were willing to do. Obviously, they went a different direction. But for Dallas individually, when they made that move, as crazy as it was, as shocking as it was to see them move on from someone as beloved as Dorian Finney-Smith, considering what he meant to the team, the community, everything, to see them move on from him was shocking. But when you kind of take a step back and you're looking at this Dallas team that was already underperforming for the year, when you're looking in the short term and in the long term, you're kind of saying, well, is this roster really in a place to, is it reasonable to expect them to go the distance, or maybe you make a move here and there, or you hope that you're in a position to trade for another star to add them to this group without taking too much away. You're asking yourself all of these questions, and it's like, is there a real path to try and bring in a second star in the near future, or is it more likely that we're going to get outbid by a team that has a young star or a treasure trove of picks, because Dallas didn't have any of those things. And so for them to go out and take the gamble on Kyrie, it's still very much in the air if it is, in fact, going to be a gamble. I mean, there's a very legitimate possibility that he walks. I personally, as of right now, I don't think that that is going to be the case, given the way some things have shaken out. But I it is a possibility that he walks in there left with nothing. And that is a nightmare scenario. But for Dallas at that time, and even now, I do think it's a move that you still make, because they weren't realistically going to take significant steps forward, and they were just going to be sitting there waiting for the right opportunity and the right blend of factors to get a deal done to help them. And that scenario just it's not a surefire thing. So when this Kyrie opportunity comes along to help give him an opportunity to start fresh, when you're looking at solely a basketball perspective, it is something that you at least have to seriously entertain. So when they went out and made that deal, as much as I love Dorian Finney-Smith, and as much as there are things that I think that he brings to the table that are not easy to find, something that is easy to find is guys that are guys that play defense. And so you can always go out and you can always go get those guys on even bargain deals sometimes, but the level and the play that Kyrie Irving brings to the table is not something that's easy to find. And so for Dallas, I think the opportunity to take a risky gamble when it was right there and you had the pieces to get it done, I think it was something that they just could not afford to overlook. And given the fact that Luka signed off on it himself, I don't think that that's something that they could just say, actually, yeah, no thanks, we changed our mind about. So I think it was the right move. Even if he ends up leaving, I still think, you know, they were just going to be in this perpetual state of mediocrity unless they switch something up, and that's what they did. So we'll see if it works out.
I'm like you on this one, Lauren. When I saw that the Mavericks acquired Kyrie at the trade deadline, I was like, in the short term, this could be huge. In the long term, I don't know, because again, with the departures of Dorian Finney-Smith and also, of course, Spencer Dinwiddie, they made big differences for the Mavericks. And it was only a year ago, hard to believe, that the Mavericks played in the Western Conference Finals. I want to get to Dorian and Spencer in just a little bit, but I want to stay with Kyrie for a moment. So the short amount of time that Kyrie has been in Dallas, coming over from Brooklyn at the trade deadline, has he had an opportunity to experience the city of Dallas? Has he had an opportunity to kind of get into the community, him and maybe some of his family members, or has it been strictly basketball for him?
I think with Kyrie, there's always going to be more than basketball in terms of, you know, having his people with him, having his family, and he's made it very clear that for him, the way he goes about his day-to-day is not just wake up, basketball, go to sleep, dream about basketball. He's made it very clear that for him, there's more to it. He's got his people, he's got things that he, you know, stands for, and those are all his personal choices. But to him, there's always more going on than basketball. And so for Kyrie, I don't know that there's necessarily been enough time for him to really see the city of Dallas. He has made comments publicly about enjoying being here and enjoying the environment. But I don't think he's necessarily had enough time to really live through the ups and downs here in Dallas when it comes to Mavericks basketball. I hope that he does, re-sign here and see what him and Luka can do together, especially, and I'm sure we'll get to this in a little bit, especially when things open up in terms of Dallas having more avenues to add players that can help them round out a potential playoff contending roster. I think once that kind of comes into play and they're a little bit more steady, I think going through an offseason, coming back in, going through training camp, and just having those conversations even with guys like Luka, Mark, Jason Kidd over the summer, I think those are all things that are going to help him feel more settled and even more at home. But so far, I think the relationship that's building between Luka and Kyrie is a good one. They seem to be very fond of each other. And so those are all good signs for Mavs fans, and just kind of looking at this situation. Obviously, there are a lot of things that they need to address and they need to get sorted out. But when it comes to Luka and Kyrie, they are the least of everybody's problems here in Dallas.
Wow, very interesting about that. We're going to get more into Luka and Kyrie in just a little bit. But I want to talk about Luka Doncic. So, again, hard to believe, again, it was only a year ago that the Mavericks were playing in the Western Conference Finals against the Golden State Warriors. We know Luka has battled his injuries this year. We know that overall it hasn't been his best season in terms of being healthy. I mean, hey, it is Luka. I mean, he's gonna, you know, he's gonna do what he can to try to be healthy. Overall, how would you rate his 2022-2023 season?
God, that's a great question. That is a really great question, because as many times as he has played at an incredible level, I have also seen examples, I should say, of times where I felt he could have been better from a leadership perspective, from a maturity perspective. That's just how I felt as I'm watching this, especially when you're watching other guys out there, how they handle their business, how they talk about the game, how they talk about leading their team and their roles on teams. So in terms of how I thought he individually was this season, I think he did everything that you could have possibly asked him to do. But there's still always room for improvement, right? You can't sit here and necessarily blame the whole season on him, even though maybe some people will say he's doing things wrong or whatever. But personally with him, I think he did everything that you've asked him to do, but that there's still room for improvement. That's probably how I'd categorize it.
All right, fair enough. And then we'll get to Luka and Kyrie in just a moment. I want to talk about head coach Jason Kidd for a moment. I mean, listen, it's hard to, again, a year ago they were playing in the Western Conference Finals, and the future looked bright for the Mavericks and what Coach Kidd could do and to take things to the next level. Well, the trade deadline happens. Kyrie comes over to Dallas, and then you've got Finney Smith as well as Dinwiddie and, of course, Jalen Brunson leaving, and he's had to deal with a lot, especially towards the end of the season. Give me your take on Jason and his season.
Yeah, Jason Kidd or Jalen Brunson? I might have misunderstood you.
Jason Kidd.
Jason Kidd, I got you. Sorry. With Jason, you know, I have been very vocal about it on social media. I have been very disappointed this season. There have been multiple instances, whether it be lineup changes, in-game adjustments, coaching play calls, last-minute scenarios where you have to draw up a play for either a game-tying bucket, a game-winning bucket, whatever the case may be, and every single scenario I felt has been handled quite poorly. And I think most people that are watching the Mavericks on a, maybe not every single game, but multiple games, I think you'll have a lot of people that would say, well, why are we doing that? Or why is this guy playing over that guy? And I don't want to say that those are all decisions that are solely in the control of Jason Kidd. I think there are always, you know, external factors, pressures, and those are conversations that are way above my pay grade. But I do think that there were a lot of obvious decisions, especially early on in the season when it came to starting JaVale McGee, which I know was promised to him in free agency, which is another problem. But whether it be starting JaVale McGee, not starting Christian Wood, not playing Jaden Hardy, there were multiple decisions night in and night out that were raised into question. And then when they get even, they become so obvious that you've got the media asking him about what goes into his decisions and why he's maybe doing this over this. And his responses to those questions were not one that either as a fan or I would even imagine as a player that you would be too pleased with. And so I have been disappointed in him this season. Last season, obviously, you mentioned they made it to the Western Conference Finals. Jalen Brunson had a breakout year. There were a lot of things going right for them last year. But this year, all of the things that you were kind of hoping for with Coach Kidd, whether it be Josh Green kind of taking steps forward, Jaden Hardy getting his opportunity. I mean, the thing with Jason Kidd that so many people talk about is, okay, he empowers these young players. We saw some of the things that he did with Giannis back in his Milwaukee days and how he's talked about wanting to come in and help Luka and how he helped Jalen Brunson and all of these things he absolutely deserves credit for. But then when the thing that he's probably best known for is empowering players and not at all coming up with I don't know, competent schemes from a schematic standpoint, when that's what you're most known for and you're not even playing the young guys or you're clearly picking the wrong rotation, it's very, very frustrating. And I imagine it was very frustrating for the players. So it's something that I continue to scratch my head about, but from everything going on right now, I have to assume that I'm going to continue to be scratching my head because it doesn't look like he's going anywhere.
All right. And, you know, something he scratched his head on a lot, especially since the trade deadline happened, is the duo of Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. I know that from Luka and Kyrie, their playing styles are very similar. They both have type A personalities. They've always been number one guys. Well, Luka's been the number one guy since he's been in Dallas. Kyrie was a part of a duo in Cleveland with LeBron for a while. And then when he got to Boston, he was the number one guy. And then when he got to Brooklyn, he was a part of a trio. That didn't work out. But Luka and Kyrie, they're both type A personalities. They're both ball dominant, and they both have the ball in their hands. What's it been like since Kyrie's arrived in Dallas, Lauren, that as far as adjusting to their playing styles, what was the adjustment like? I know that it wasn't something that happened overnight, but it's been a lot of adjustments. What's been the adjustments like with Luka and Kyrie having to adapt to one another's playing styles?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that they probably have both had to take a little bit of getting used to is just playing at the other's speed. I think there have been times where we've seen Kyrie come in, especially in the first couple of games where he showed up and Luka was out, and he got different groups playing with pace. He had them getting out in transition and running. Josh Green had a couple of big games there because he was maximizing and benefiting from a system that was playing with pace and getting out and moving. And so I think, and I think on the flip side, you've got Kyrie, who, like you mentioned, when he used to play with someone like LeBron, and I think Luka, I think there are similarities there in terms of how Kyrie has to play next to someone like a LeBron or like a Luka. I think he's finding himself in similar positions there. I think that Kyrie has also had to adjust to Luka having a ball in his hands or when he gets going and nobody can stop him the same way LeBron did in Cleveland. I think Kyrie has had to adjust to slowing down and being the off-ball guy who's waiting for the catch and shoot opportunities. And with Kyrie and with the two of them playing together, I mean they've done everything that you could have asked them to do. Really, I think all of the Mavericks' problems, again, I don't think they have to do with either of those two. Their numbers have been good together. They have, like I mentioned, they have continued to build this relationship where they seem interested and happy to be playing together. I mean, Kyrie finished the year on near 40-50-90 splits. And so I think everything that you could have asked him to do, he came in and did. He proved that he could adjust, that he could get groups to play with pace, but he also proved that he could play off ball with Luka or even take over when Luka's on the floor, which is something that Dallas just has not had. Next to Luka, there were nights where even Spencer Dinwiddie would. There were nights when Spencer Dinwiddie was that guy where Luka could kind of step off, and Spencer Dinwiddie would pop off. But it wasn't to the degree that you can expect on a night-to-night basis with someone like Kyrie Irving. And so I think it's provided a little bit of just like comfort in that area in terms of being able to have flexibility and draw things up for other guys or let Luka take a possession off, whatever the case may be. Just more trust overall. But I think as they continue to grow together and have one guy get subbed out and have one guy on the floor at all times running a group, and then them starting the games and finishing the games with both of them on the floor, just having more time to play together, I think will ultimately bode very well for them. I think they just need to finish or get the rest of that roster rounded out and kind of start building continuity from there, because this current formula that they've got is not going to be one that is ever going to provide them success.
You know, speaking of success, Lauren, again, last year the Mavericks played in the Western Conference Finals, and we saw Luka Doncic come of age in this series. We also saw Dorian Finney-Smith play well. We saw Spencer Dinwiddie, and we also saw someone that was a perfect number two, and that was point guard Jalen Brunson. We know what happened in the offseason with Jalen not getting the brand new contract. He headed off to greener pastures playing for the New York Knicks, and now the Knicks are in the playoffs. And so Brunson was a great, in my opinion, I thought he was a great number two to Luka for someone that's very ball dominant and someone that has that type A personality. So Jalen goes away to New York in the offseason, and then Dorian Finney-Smith, solid shooter, a solid defender, and then we know what Spencer Dinwiddie was capable of. So you lose Jalen, and then Dorian and Spencer, a trade deadline. Do you think this is what led to the downward spiral towards the end of the season? So after you acquire Kyrie in the trade deadline, Dorian and Spencer are gone, and then before that, Jalen is no longer there. Do you think this what this is what led to the downward spiral of Dallas, especially towards the end of this season?
I think it's a good question. It's hard to pinpoint the downward spiral starting with Jalen Brunson. They definitely knew that going into the season, things were going to look different because as much as Jalen was a perfect fit for being someone that can play off ball and be the number two, but also kind of take over at times and initiate things, and just had the trust of his teammates and of the coach and of Luka as well. He had all those things, but on top of that, he had the personality to welcome it all and take on everything that comes to doing all of the right things, but still just being the sidekick when all the lights are on Luka. He had the personality, the leadership, the maturity to take all of that on. And that is something that cannot be understated and something that may have been overlooked by Dallas before it was too late. I'm not quite sure how to pinpoint how they assessed or even evaluated all of those factors. But losing Jalen Brunson had a much greater impact than just his numbers walking out the door. With Dorian Finney-Smith, and I think most people would probably agree with this, that do follow the Mavericks very closely, Dorian has been the heart and soul of the team for many years now. That's how he carries himself. That's how he leads. That's how he impacts the guys around him, the staff, everybody. And so losing a guy like that, everyone talks about how he was one of the few defenders that they had, and that's true, but he was also the heart and soul of the team. And so to me, I don't want to pinpoint that as the downward spiral because there was a lot of optimism with Kyrie, and there were some great moments with Kyrie this season. And I know that they were hoping that going post-trade deadline, they were going to go through a kind of quote-unquote easy stretch of the schedule and hope that they could hit their stride with Kyrie and go hit the ground running from there. But when you lose someone like Dorian Finney-Smith, you're battling some injuries. It was just one thing after another, and that's kind of what their downward spiral was. I don't want to discredit Jalen Brunson, but I do feel like the downward spiral was truly losing the heart and soul of the team with Dorian Finney-Smith when they already were undergoing the impact or just dealing with the impact of losing a Jalen Brunson. When you then have to, on top of that, lose a Dorian Finney-Smith, that's very difficult.
Yeah, it was very tough when that trade went down. I mean, Kyrie Irving, again, is a once-in-a-lifetime talent, but it was tough, you know, when Jalen leaving to go to New York, and then when you trade Dorian and Spencer, that's definitely a tough deal. But, you know, hopefully better and brighter days lie ahead for those gentlemen. And speaking of a gentleman, in the recent news, Luka Doncic, there's been reports. We know that it's been well documented that his frustration with management, with Mark Cuban, it's been evident in a lot of the post-game press conferences, and especially towards the end of the season where Luka has mentioned that he's been frustrated. But there's also been rumors about maybe a trade request at the end of 2024. Two-part question. Can you go more into detail about the frustration that he's felt recently and the rumors of trade requests maybe in 2024?
Yeah. So I will say that with Luka, as much as people will like to talk about seeing him on the floor and seeing him throw his quote-unquote tantrums and his attitude, people have lots to say about that, but one thing that I have learned about Luka is that when it comes to serious matters and things that are big picture items, he's not going to put those on display for the whole world. He's not going to go out and tweet or put on his Instagram story that he's unhappy or, you know, X, Y, or Z. I've never seen anything. He can always prove me wrong, but I have never seen him carry himself or say something publicly to lead someone to believe what's next in that regard. I have also heard, just in my time, just around certain things and certain people, I have heard people say that, okay, well, all of the times Luka gets up and says publicly, you know, I don't know where these are coming from. I didn't say anything. Those are not my words, blah, blah, blah. I have also heard those people say that everyone knows that there's internal pressure. Everyone knows that there is that Luka is looking for upgrades, all of these things. And so I do believe that there's internal pressure. I do believe that the summer of 2024, which is the end of next season, as crazy as it sounds, I do believe all of those things are on the table because, I mean, he is where he is in his career. He is where he is in his current contract. And the Mavs are where they are as of today. And so I do want to say that I think the Mavs have opportunities to improve the roster, as crazy as that sounds. I know there's a lot of conversation right now going on about this draft situation, and if they keep their 10th overall pick, they could jump up, they could get bumped out of it. I think it's important to note that if they keep it, that's great. If they jump, even better. But even if they lose it, while that would suck, I've seen some people say that that is nightmare scenario, and Luka, if that happens, Luka is walking without a doubt. And I disagree with that. I think that if Dallas loses that pick, while yes, that would suck, they no longer then have any protections on 2024, which is, as of today, what would happen. The 2024 pick would then become the replacement pick if they keep their pick in this year's draft. And so if they don't keep their pick in this year's draft and they get bumped out, well, then now they have more picks to trade at this next trade deadline when all of their picks, with the exception of the ones around the Kyrie trade, they'll have multiple first-round picks available to trade. And so there's absolutely no reason why this year they can't get a deal done to try and significantly put them in a better position to compete for a title. And I think most people that are following the Mavs or that are looking at this situation are saying the Mavs have Luka. They believe that they will have Kyrie to start the season next year. What they are missing is a true five that can protect the rim, anchor a defense, and then just a couple, one or two, ideally two or three, veteran wing players that are switchable and can play defense. And those kinds of guys, when you have a Luka and a Kyrie, those kinds of guys you can go get. The same way they got Justin Holiday. Justin Holiday is a perfect example of that. You just need a couple more guys like that can fill the gaps. You need people to be healthy. And I feel I feel confident that they would feel confident in contending with that roster. They just need to go out there and push their chips in and go get that big man. And I'm sorry, but JaVale McGee is not that guy.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a lot of changes in the offseason with this team. And speaking of changes, we know that the owner of the team, Mark Cuban, we know about his history. We know about being very vocal about what he likes and what he doesn't like, whether it be with his franchise or the players or even things with the NBA. What's been Mark's situation like in dealing with Luka and his frustration and how the Luka and Kyrie situation ended towards the end of the season and, of course, dealing with Jalen leaving in the offseason and the trade deadline? What's been the latest with him as you continue to cover the team?
Yeah, I think going into this offseason, I think there are going to be multiple conversations that ultimately are had, whether it be about the future with Jason Kidd, even though I firmly believe that he's not going anywhere. I think there will be conversations had about what the path forward is with Luka. I think there will be conversations that are had that include Luka. And I also think there will be conversations between him and Nico Harrison, him and Jason Kidd, maybe all of them together. I think there are going to be lots of conversations being had about what can we do to put this team in a position to be successful. And not even just what can we do, but how can we do it? I'm not talking, oh, yeah, we need a rim-protecting defensive anchor five. I'm talking about let's get a list going of guys that are reasonably attainable and the path forward that we could be going about to have them. And on top of that, when the new season starts or on draft night, those conversations pick up and conversations are started once again. And so I think that there are always deals that are talked about amongst front offices, and I think people know that Dallas are in a desperate position, which might ultimately result in them having to overpay to bring someone in trade-wise, or even they could be looking at other teams that also find themselves in desperate situations and go out and find that guy. I think there are plenty of situations worth monitoring around the league, but I do – another thing that I want to add is that while the Mavs front office is getting a lot of slack right now, as they should, especially with this most recent – blunder that has resulted in the start of the investigation into them intentionally tanking, the front Nico Harrison individually has for me individually has proven that yes, you should have faith in him to go out there and to continue to put a roster together, because since he has entered the door, he has been nothing short of aggressive. And if you are a Mavs fan that has been following the former regime since 1980, that hasn't really ever done anything surprising. This new regime with Nico Harrison and what he has come in from the second he came in, and yeah, did they lose Jalen Brunson? Yes, but in my mind, based on everything that I've heard, that has more to do with Mark Cuban than it has to do with Nico Harrison. excuse me. And so with Nico Harrison individually, he went out, he made the Christian Wood trade, which for Dallas, that was a trade you make 10 times out of 10. He drafted Jaden Hardy, traded to get into the draft to then draft Jaden Hardy, which was a clear win pick for Dallas since day one. And that was that kind of move, trading into halfway into the second round, was a move that the previous regime never would have made. They would have said the draft is pretty much over, let's call it a night. Not Nico Harrison. Nico Harrison got back in there. He got in there. He got Jaden Hardy, and he has just continued to even pulling the trigger on a Kristaps Porzingis trade and moving on from that, and then going out and being aggressive once again and pulling the trigger on a Kyrie trade. He has been aggressive since day one, and I do have faith in him. I think he's a good guy to have on your side. To me, the biggest challenge is going to be Jason Kidd and Mark Cuban. How do you feel about the current group? Can everybody get on the same page about the areas that need improvement or not? And if not, then odds are you're probably going to lose Luka because you can't put a winning formula together. And like I said, in terms of roster construction, that is Nico Harrison's job. Mark Cuban has a big say in it, but I do think Nico is going to be able to at least try and put one more thing together to try and put this team in a position to compete. Will it be enough? Who knows? It'll ultimately be up to Luka to see if it's enough in the short term to stick a Band-Aid on things and keep him around, or if it's not even close and it's the last straw that sends him out the door.
All right, and then that segues into the next topic, the outlook going forward for Dallas next season. So there's a lot on the table going into this offseason. We've got the Luka and Kyrie situation. We've got free agents, the draft is coming up. So I've got to ask you, first thing for as far as the outlook going forward for Dallas next season, the Kyrie situation, is there any way possible that they can lock him up in the long term or maybe have him around for one, maybe two more years? And you mentioned it earlier, but just going to kind of go a little bit more into detail about that. Also, as you mentioned, getting a better supporting cast around Luka and maybe a number two that can get around those, work with those type A personalities like a Luka and a Kyrie, as well as improving on the bench.
I do think that to keep Kyrie, I feel optimistic that they will keep him. I feel optimistic that they will keep him, especially given the current state of the Lakers. I do feel like things can always change, especially when we're talking about the Lakers. If they underperform, I think that opens up the Kyrie question once again. But they would have to make some serious roster adjustments once again just to bring in Kyrie, and that always comes with another a big load of questions. Again, do you really want to sacrifice a bunch of guys that you have seen can fit the roster? Do you really want to sacrifice bringing in those guys, or do you want to keep running with this group instead of consolidating all of those guys for one player and going all in on a trio and banking on them staying healthy? Is that really what you want to do? And I think going on history's path, if you're trying to build a formula and you do think that going in all in on Kyrie is a good idea, you have AD's injury concerns. There are serious concerns about Kyrie staying consistently available looking at previous years. So for me, I think the Lakers, I do think that they're going to kind of stick with this group that they've got. I think they like them, and I do think that that's the right move for them, which then leaves Kyrie looking around at, okay, well, this situation right now, yeah, they've got a lot of work to do, but where else would I go? And I think he's always going to have suitors, but I do think right now the opportunity for him to get the most favorable contract in terms of money, but also stipulations from a player perspective, I do believe, I don't know this for sure, but this is my perception, I believe that he is over there saying the Mavs are in a desperate enough situation that they can't lose me. So in my contract negotiations, I do believe that I can get the most favorable contract. I think I can squeeze the most out of the Mavericks to stay here. And if it doesn't improve, then I can once again request a trade and move on. And from the Dallas side of things, I do think that that's your best case scenario. Even if he squeezes stuff out of you and it's an overly favorable contract for Kyrie Irving, I think that that's still your best bet, because worst case scenario, he leaves and you're back to square one. If he stays, you have to assume, again, based on the past, that he will ultimately request a trade. But even when that does come, we have also seen, based on history, that he still continues to net assets, whether it be a Dorian Finney-Smith, whether it be, you know, first-round draft picks. The conversations of a return package for Kyrie Irving is always more than nothing. And so for Dallas, you've got to operate under that assumption and kind of move forward going there. And priority number one needs to be retaining Kyrie, which is a big reason why I don't think Jason Kidd will be going anywhere.
All right. Again, I've asked a lot of questions and I've got lots of answers from those questions that you heard it from. She is Lauren Gunn, co-host of the Objective Basketball Podcast and also co-host of the Gunshot Podcast. Again, Lauren, again, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us. Just tell everybody what's going on over at the Objective Basketball Podcast as well as the Gunshot.
Absolutely. Well, first, thank you so much for having me. You know, I always love coming on here and chatting with you, and thank you for working with me with my schedule, because I know it's always a pain. I you can follow me on social media on Twitter at TheLaurenGunn. That's G-U-N-N. I do co-host the Objective Basketball Podcast for SBPN Sports with S. Barahini. We cover every NBA team. We're currently looking at the play-in and our playoff predictions right now. We just finished recording that episode earlier today. So that will be up this week, and we are getting ready to dive into all things playoffs before eventually hitting the draft and then the offseason. So we've got lots of good stuff coming up for everybody. Come tune in. We do our best to talk about everything in the NBA, every team, every story. We always hit every storyline. So please come join the conversation. And we are always looking to chat.
Awesome. Tell everybody where they can find you on social media, as well as the Objective Basketball Podcast and the Gunshot on social media and any websites. Let them know that as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at TheLaurenGunn. You can also come check us out of the Objective Basketball Podcast on all podcast platforms. We also you can follow us and come subscribe on YouTube. We upload our pods on there as well, so you can have the visuals to them. We post them under the SDPN Sports account, so just look up SDPN Sports and you will find us there. And you can also follow the Gunshot Podcast on Twitter at the Gunshot, and come check out what we're talking about there.
Awesome. And you heard it from her. She is Lauren Gunn, co-host of the Objective Basketball Podcast and also co-host of the Gunshot Podcast, covering all things related to the NBA and, of course, the Dallas Mavericks. We'll be back with more right after this.
There's Lawson. He'll fire to tie the game. No. Nealakina tried to save it. White to tie it. No. And the Bulls
Let's go home. Let's go home. The Bulls win. The Bulls win. John Holmes saved the Chicago. Beat, beat. What an exciting game. Hey, listen, on the real, exciting game.
Sure
exciting
was.
Game. These kids, hey, they could have folded. They could have folded. The biggest lead, Dallas had a 15-point lead. The Bulls could have folded. The guys could have rolled over. They didn't. Great effort by these young kids, man. What a fun game to call tonight.
The Dallas Mavericks officially eliminated from play-in contention.
The Dallas Mavericks are an absolute mess. Let's say what it is, and I feel very bad saying that because I love me some Mark Cuban. And I respect the hell out of Nico Harrison, who I've known for years. It's an absolute mess.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the report. I don't know who. Somebody said that I was going to just equate a trade. It was funny, you know, because I didn't know that was true. Cause I didn't say it. I know. I know no sources said it.
No, no. Be very serious.
Yeah, I mean, that's normal.
Right.
I mean, something's got to change, you know, for sure. I mean, last year when we went to Western Conference Finals, we were having fun. You know, the camera, I always talk about the chemistry we had. It was great. But some things got to change for sure. We'll see about it. I don't want to talk to the media about it.
Oops.
Get on top of it before they do. Every 24 minutes, tipped furniture or a falling TV sends an injured child to the emergency room. Preventing tip-over incidents is easy, inexpensive, and only takes 5 minutes. Learn how to secure your furniture and TVs to protect children at anchorit.gov.
Everybody, welcome back to the program. Once again, a big special thank you to Lauren Gunn, co-host of the Objective Basketball and the Gunshot Podcast. Again, giving us great insight on the current happenings with the Dallas Mavericks. All right, before we get on out of here, let's give you what's on tap for the play-in tournament. We have the Atlanta Hawks going up against the Miami Heat, and this is definitely, as I mentioned earlier, they're going to be playing in Miami, and this is going to be an interesting game. A lot of points I expect are going to be scored. Trae Young. You've got John Collins. You've also got DeJounte Murray, just to name a few. Of course, Clint Capella, one of the best rim protectors in the NBA, one of the best rebounders and defensive players in the league. As for Miami, you've got Jimmy Butler, a.k.a. Jimmy Butler, Jimmy Bucket. You've got Tyler Hero. You've also got Bam Adebayo, again, one of the best defenders and rebounders in the league. So this should be an entertaining game. I expect a lot of high scoring in this one. I like Miami to beat Atlanta in the first play-in tournament game. And then the other play-in tournament games that we have, well, one of them, I should say, will be the Minnesota Timberwolves going up against the Los Angeles Lakers. We know about the dysfunction of the Timberwolves involving Rudy Gobert and Kyle Anderson, that altercation that they had, and then Jaden McDaniels injures his hand out for the season after punching a wall in frustration. So the Timberwolves have all sorts of stuff going on with them and all the wrong reasons. Meanwhile, the Los Angeles Lakers are red hot right now, and Anthony Davis is hot at the right time. Austin Reeves is heating up. He's emerging. And, of course, LeBron James. When LeBron is in playoff mode, look out. And certainly I think the Lakers are definitely going to have their way beating the Minnesota Timberwolves. So I have the Miami Heat beating the Atlanta Hawks, and I have the Los Angeles Lakers beating the Minnesota Timberwolves. All right, the other play-in tournament games that we have are going to be the Chicago Bulls versus the Toronto Raptors. When you think of the Bulls, some of the stars on that team with the likes of a Zach LaVine and a Nikola Vucevic. But this is going to be a homecoming, sort of speak, for DeMar DeRozan. Began his career with Toronto. Going to be emotional. It's going to be intense. I know people in Toronto still have so much love and respect for DeMar DeRozan. As for the Toronto Raptors, Fred VanVleet, OG Anunoby, also Pascal Siakam, and you can't forget about Scotty Barnes as well. So Scotty and the rest of the crew, the Raptors, is going to be rocking when they play in Toronto. Going to be a close game. Again, I think it's going to be a high-scoring game like Atlanta and Miami, but I like Toronto to beat Chicago to win that one in Toronto. Again, I like the Raptors to win. And then we got a great one down in the Crescent City between the Oklahoma City Thunder and the New Orleans Pelicans. If you know the history of these two cities, it goes back to Hurricane Katrina when the year of Katrina, the 05-06 season, the games were played. Actually, New Orleans, they split their games between Oklahoma City and Baton Rouge. So there's a connection that the New Orleans Pelicans have with the Oklahoma City Thunder organization. So during the Katrina year in 05 and 06, the Pelicans split their games between Oklahoma City and Baton Rouge. And then the 06-07 season, they split their games between Oklahoma City and New Orleans, with the majority of those games being played in Oklahoma City before the Pelicans returned to New Orleans full-time for the 07-08 season. So Oklahoma City and New Orleans, again, these two teams, young stars, rising stars in the NBA. Oklahoma City has SGA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Of course, you can't forget about Josh Giddey. Jalen Williams is going to be a candidate for this year's Rookie of the Year, Rookie of the Year Award. For the New Orleans Pelicans, I think New Orleans, well, I said this last year and I'm going to say it this year, New Orleans is going to be the X factor in the play-in tournament on the Western Conference side. No Zion Williamson, I still don't think it's going to be a problem. You've got Brandon Ingram, you've got Jonas Valanciunas, you've got Trey Murphy, who really emerged, especially this, not just this year, but especially during the All-Star weekend. You've got Larry Nance Jr., who's an effective rim protector of Herb Jones, and Jose Alvarado, who I believe is expected to be in the play-in game against Oklahoma City. So we know the New Orleans Pelicans, that crowd is going to be rocking at the Smoothie King Center in downtown New Orleans. When is it not rocking in New Orleans, right? So Oklahoma City and New Orleans, I think this is going to be the show stealer of the first play-in tournament games. I like New Orleans to beat Oklahoma City in a thriller. So again, I like Miami to beat Atlanta. I like the LA Lakers to beat Minnesota. I like Toronto to beat Chicago. And I like New Orleans to beat Oklahoma City. And that's going to do it for this edition of At the Rim. Once again, a big special thank you to Lauren Gunn, co-host of the Objective Basketball and Gunshot podcast. The Objective Basketball podcast, again, highlights the latest information in the NBA. And of course, with the other podcast that she does with her brother, Grant, they take a look at the latest in Dallas Mavericks content and also give you information regarding the NBA small market teams. Again, a big special thank you to Lauren for appearing on the program. And until next time, everybody, I'm Ed Robinson saying so long, and you've been listening to At the Rim. And I just want to, before we end the show, I want to extend my sincere condolences and thoughts and prayers to the victims of that tragic shooting at a bank that happened in downtown Louisville, Kentucky. Again, this is the same old story. And again, I'm not numb to this. I'm sorry. This is just so sad and so heartbreaking, where people thought they were going to be on their way to work and have a productive day, and they thought they were going to be coming home, but they didn't. There were some people that didn't make it home. They didn't get an opportunity to walk in the door and say hello to their spouses or say hello to their loved ones or their children or family members or, you know, their close friends or whatever. And we can't take this for granted. We can't take for granted leaving home thinking we're going to come back. We cannot take this for granted at all. Tomorrow's not promised to any of us. So let's be grateful and thankful where we can just have the opportunity to leave our place of residences, go to our jobs, or take care of our business and come back home safely. We cannot take that for granted at all. And I'm sure those people that were in the bank handling business, taking care of business. They had no idea that they would be hurt or even be traumatized by this incident. So again, my thoughts and prayers are with the victims of the families that went through that horrible shooting at a bank in downtown Louisville, Kentucky. Our thoughts and prayers are with you.